It is our great pleasure to be with E.L. Doctorow here on the Paula Gordon Show, Bill Russell and I, Paula. When I knew you were coming, I did my homework and read the march, and of course I had a wonderful time doing that. And then I had a day, and I thought, well, this is just too good. So I went back, and I looked at all the books you had written, and I thought, I have time for one more novel. And I picked the Book of Daniel, because I simply had never had the wherewithal to read the Book of Daniel. It's about the McCarthy era. It's about really the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I picked up your 2005 edition to the Modern Library, and in it you say, you prompt me to this because you talk about democracy. You'd written the book in 71, and in 2005 you say, and I quote you from your introduction, "So I knew up to the minute how a democracy goes crazy from time to time." Yeah. And it seemed to me that you were, in all of these books, giving me a chance to look at democracy, to look at how we do, what we do. In the Book of Daniel, you sort of sum it all up, saying, if you want this thing to happen, make sure that Americans are very afraid. And it seemed between this notion of fear, which you can find in all of the books, and democracy, that I was beginning to have a sense of what you've been about as you write and think your way through these stories.
Well, in the 1950s, fear became a political tactic, and it was very useful to some politicians, certainly to Richard Nixon, who made his career, and the sort of rampant anti-communism. So the enemy was not only the Soviet Union, and there was good reason to worry about the Soviet Union, but the enemy was oneself. There were these people among us who were out to do us in, and we had to do something about it. We had to create a class of person called a subversive, and it wasn't people who had committed crimes, it was people who didn't think the way the rest of us thought. And Senator Vandenberg, the leading Republican senator, said at the time to get the country behind the nuclear race, as we've got to scare hell out of the American people, is what he said. And of course, that's what is happening today with a totally different enemy, with things like the really dangerous Patriot Act. This kind of careless handling of the Constitution on the part of the present administration is very reckless and quite dangerous in my view. But there it is, the fear factor again, and opportunistic politicians know that it works. They do know. The other day there was this thing about the subways in New York being attacked, and it turned out to be specious. But why did that happen? Well, what else was going on that we had to forget about at that moment? Well, it might have had something to do with this developing case in Washington about releasing the name of Valerie Plame illegally on the part of certain highly placed members of the administration. So, yes, fear, there it is. And it's not just the government that can do that, but it can be the media that do it too. I mean, the news broadcast loves to talk about plagues and viruses for some reason, most of which are never going to happen.
That's right.
But so we all walk around states of anxiety, and of course, when you feel that way, you don't think about much of anything else, and whatever's done gets done with no resistance. I think that Book of Daniel was about democracy going crazy from time to time, yes.
One of the interesting things about this series of books that you've written, the Civil War was sort of a pivotal point because it was the place at which the absurdity of what we'd written into the Constitution became manifest, and we did something about it. The inclusion of slavery overtly.
In the Constitution.
In the Constitution. And it was sort of a pivotal event. But in many ways, And I go back to what you said about the sort of counter myth that your books present to the current myth, and in some way that acts as a solvent. And coming from the Civil War, really, in many ways to today, the solvent effects of what you are seeing and writing about, to me, help us get a better idea of the accomplishments, the achievements of democracy in the American manifestation of it, not universal, but the American version of it, but also its acute failings and the dangers that are almost inherent in it and that we have to deal with on an ongoing basis. And it requires, and again, I think your books help with this, it requires that we keep our eyes open. It requires that we think critically. It requires that we question aggressively what's going on around us.
Yeah, well, it is true that in a sense it's turning myth back to history again when you write fiction. If history is what people are concerned about. In biblical times, of course, the ancient Hebrews, the minute they violated their covenant, bad things happen. Well, we have a covenant with the Constitution, and when we misapply it or abuse it, bad things happen. And so it's a covenantal kind of relationship that I think the Bible can instruct us on. And that's interesting to me because so many of the fervent fundamentalist evangelicals here don't understand that the very freedom they've had and we've all had to believe or not believe and practice our religions as we saw fit is exactly the great gift of a secular constitution. And they don't seem to understand that. It's true that people have always called on God in American politics. Certainly Martin Luther King did. His religious faith was a great empowering strength to his pursuit of racial equality. But it's true that the Ku Klux Klan had a religious basis. And in the Civil War itself, both the abolitionists and the slaveholders cited the Bible and God for their... but something is different now. They're not... in those days, people called on their faith to justify their politics. I think what's different now is these people are calling on the country to certify their faith. There's an immense difference in those two ways of looking at this. And I think that's... I would like some way to find a way to talk to these people who are so righteous and full of aggressive rectitude, to see if we couldn't find a way to talk together about these things.
Have you started the next book?
Not yet, no.
Well, one of the other interesting things in that context is this to me in some ways is a novel-length meditation on war. And you say, I'm listening to what you were saying, there's a paragraph in there where I think it's Sherman, talking about this, you know, this essentially is hell that we're in the middle of. Sherman was famously quoted as saying war is hell, but that it was hell without the benefit, the implication of a heaven, that this is just pure hell. Mm. Yeah. That is the war that is going on, and particularly the breakdown, the chaos that goes along with that.
Anarchy was your word.
Well, and in many ways, this is a cautionary piece on those people who think that war is just a grand old thing. The Civil War in itself, I think, was that. But certainly this book is to me a wonderful meditation on just how wonderful war isn't once you get into the middle of it. Easy to start, hard to stop.
Yeah. Sherman himself believed that the South had committed treason. The insurrection, as he called it, was an act of treason, and it had to be defeated. At the same time, he'd spent a lot of time in the South before the war. Mm-hmm. He knew the terrain. One of the things that made his campaign so effective was he knew the terrain so well.
And he danced with the ladies in Charleston.
Yeah, he didn't need the maps, really. But so there was a a great conflict within him, and he was resolute in defeating. But once he'd won, the satisfaction, the pride dissolved rather quickly, I think. And he immediately went down south, left the army, and went down to the communities that he'd ravaged and started to oversee relief and rehabilitation operations. And he was very defensive about that campaign for the rest of his life. And you can see that in his memoirs. The character who makes this observation about a hell without a heaven is actually a Union soldier, Stephen Walsh, who's kind of anti-clerical Irishman who's been paid $300 to substitute for some rich kid in New York City.
Upper East Side, you say?
And I like him. I like him very much. And he's the one, he falls in love with Pearl, the white Negro girl. And I was interested to see how they would get along. And by the end of the book, they had a pretty good relationship, don't you think?
I do, E.L. Doctorow.
They pretty well worked it out. It took some doing.
E.L. Doctorow does that for all kinds of characters and for us in his many novels. Be with us when we return in a moment for a couple more minutes with E.L. Doctorow on The Paula Gordon Show.